Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Nun Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins from the fourth line from the top. Before we begin the shiur, let us take advantage of one of the features of the Shas Ozer. That's the marked Gemara that appears on your screen. You can see in the outside margin the Nosei topic heading, and we've written under that Drusa. Kamo mechalal habehema tzorich pedika. Drusa is the topic that we have been dealing with in our previous shiurim, and it involves an animal that's attacked, and as a result of the attack, venom is deposited in the victim, and we have to know if you see redness on the flesh of the victim, that indicates that it has been attacked and hence becomes a drusa. There are situations that we discussed in our previous year where there's something called a sofek drusa, a doubt arises, has the animal been attacked? When that is the case, we have to check out the victim before we slaughter it in order to establish is it a trefa or not. The trefa being a result of redness that develops on the animal as a result of the attack. What we've said in very broad terms. Now turning to the Gemara. Yosef Rav Yitzchok bar Shmuel bar Marta kameid Rav Nachman. Rav Yitzchok was seated in the presence of Rav Nachman. V'yosef v'komar, and Rav Yitzchok said, Drusa she'omru tzricha b'dika keneged b'nei me'ayim. Notice the diamond here. There is another diamond that appears a few lines later. This is explained under the Mivne heading in the outside margin. We have featured a diamond there, and we've written Shnei Piskei Halacha Benosei Hanal, two halachic rulings regarding this topic of drusa and the need to check for it. So Rav Yitzchok says that a drusa that needs to be checked, it needs to be checked in the area of the body that's opposite or that's over the innards, the b'nei me'ayim. Amalei Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman reacts, and he says, Hu Elokim. Hu Elokim is an expression of oath, of exclamation. He says, Mori bo Rav, mikafo v'ad atmo. Rav rules differently. He says, mikafo, which is an expression that the Gemara will define, ad atma until the thigh. In other words, from the calf until the thigh, the animal needs to be checked. And you're telling me just the b'nei me'ayim? The Gemara goes on, my kafo. What is meant by kafo? I lemo kafo di yodo. If you're referring to the shoulder blade, well, then hainu keneged b'nei me'ayim. That, in effect, is the same thing that Rav Yitzchok said. And Rav Nachman wouldn't have reacted as he did. Elo mikafo demoicho ad atmo, from the skull until the thigh needs to be checked. So Rav Nachman, in quoting Rav's ruling, is saying that much more than keneged the b'nei me'ayim needs to be checked. Rather, from the skull until the thigh, which will include even the neck organs, need to be checked to see if that is the area that you will discover redness as a result of a possible attack. Kisolik Reb Chiya Bar Yosef, when Reb Chiya Bar Yosef went up to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechinu Reb Yochanan Reish Lakish Diasvi V'Kamri, he found these two great figures, Reb Yochanan Reish Lakish, sitting and saying the following, Drusa Shamru, Tzricha B'nika Keneged B'nei Me'ayim, just like we saw before, Reb Yitzchok saying, Omar Lehu, Reb Chiya reacts, Ho Elokim, similar to the way Rav Nachman reacted before, he says, Mori bo Rav, mikafo v'yad atmo. Rav rules that it needs to be checked more than the area of the b'nei me'ayim, but rather from mikafo v'yad atmo. And we explained before, that meant from the head, from the skull, till the thigh. All of the animal, till the thigh, needs to be checked. which includes, of course, much more than the area of B'nai Me'ayim alone. Omalei Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, upon hearing Rav being quoted, it may be pointed out that Rav, historically, we'll see very shortly, he originally started off in Eretz Yisrael and left as a result of an incident that the Gemara reports at the end of Maseches Yuma. He had to leave and go to Bovel. In the meantime, you have Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish that lived and developed in Eretz Yisrael. Reish Lakish, upon hearing a Rav being quoted, he says, "Monu Rav u'monu Rav lo yodan alei. Who is this Rav that's being quoted, and I don't know him?" Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan turns to Reish Lakish and says, "V'lo nehiro lei lo'isei talmid sheshimesh es Rebbe Rabo v'Rebbe Chia. You don't remember that student." He's referring, of course, to Rav. "You don't remember him, that he, years ago, was serving," in other words, learning by Rebbe Rabbos, Rebbe Yehuda HaNossi, and Rebbe Chia, the great figures that lived at the closing of the Mishnah period. These Amoraim that we're discussing now, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, they represented the first generation of the Amoraic period. So, and Rav himself was at this juncture between the Tanoim and Amoraim. So Rabbi Yochanan says, "You don't remember that prominent student that learned by Rebbe and Rebbe Chia V'Elokim Kol Oysen Shonim Sheshimesh Oysi Talmud B'Yeshiva, all those years that student, that he was then a young man, we'll say, that he was learning by Rebbe and Rebbe Chia, he was seated. Ani Shimashti Bamido, and I," Rabbi Yochanan is speaking, and Rabbi Yochanan was a very prominent figure here. He was the leading rabbinic figure in Eretz Yisrael, you might say. And he's telling Reish Lakish that in those years, he was seated, then Rav was seated, and I was standing, indicating Rav's preeminence. And now Reish Lakish asks, "Uman Gavar Hu, in what area is he great?" So Rabbi Yochanan answers, "Gavar Bakula, he's great in Torah learning and he's great in piety and personal behavior." Miyad Pasach Reish Lakish V'yomar. Then Reish Lakish opened and said, "Bram Zachur Oso Ish Letov She'omru Shmua Mipiv." Now the Rashi adds that Pasach Reish Lakish V'yomar Nihiroli V'zochur Hu Letov. I do recall him, and we mention him for the good. And we're fortunate to be able to say over, that a halacha was said over in his name. The Gemara now goes on to a new point. Hence, we see that we have a slash mark in the Gemara, indicating that this next piece, though it's a short piece, is not dealing with Drusa. The topic heading that we've assigned on the outside margin says, Shchita b'behema shenish mitu simoneho. We're talking about the slaughtering of an animal whose neck organs, after it's been shechted, we discover they have become dislodged. Shmuta u'shchuta k'shera. An animal whose neck organs appear now after the shchita to be dislodged is kosher. In other words, it's shmuta, dislodged now. Shchuta, it had been shechted. Now, how do we know that this was not, you weren't dealing with an animal whose neck organs were dislodged from the outset prior to the shchita, which would have been a problem? If the neck organs were let's say dislodged and loose because of their have been dislocated from their normal position of growth, then you wouldn't have been able to accomplish a shechita. From the continuation of the Gemara, one will get the impression that if the neck organs are loosely in place, so the shechita would not have been able to be accomplished successfully. But after all, you're cutting into the neck, and if the organs are, let us say, loose, they would have, let's say, escaped from being cut in a shechita way. The fact that you have an animal whose neck was cut and a successful looking shechita appears, that indicates that the neck organs must have been firmly in place at the time of the shechita. The fact that now they are dislocated, this is something must have taken place after it was shechted. Rabbi Yochanan Omer Yovi V'Yakif. Rabbi Yochanan has a more cautious approach. He says what you do is you cut the neck organs that you have in front of you after it after the animal appears to have been shechted. You cut the neck organs in a different location, and then Yakif means and compare. Compare if the point of shechita, the point that the shechita took place, looks like this current cut that I made, then this will be a trefa, because it will show that the cutting, since they resemble each other, and this cutting certainly took place after they have been dislodged, so the original shechita must have taken place in dislodged neck organs. Omar Rav Nachman, Loi Shanu. Now Rav Nachman goes to qualify the opening statement, which said Shmuta Shchutas Kshera. He says that that idea that it's kosher is Lo Shon Elo Shelo Tofas Besimonim. That's when the slaughterer did not, at the time of the slaughtering, grab hold of the neck organs. Avol Tofas Besimonim V'Shochat. If he grabbed hold of the neck organs, creating, we'll say, an artificial tension, then efshir l'shmuta sh'teyaseh shchuta, it could be that an animal whose neck organs were already dislodged, but as a result of the grabbing of them, the tension that's put on them, a successful shchita could be done, even though those organs are already dislodged. The Gemara now goes on to analyze the closing phrase of the Mishnah that appeared at the beginning of the Perek. And we have a topic heading that accompanies this section. You'll notice the nosei on the outside margin, ze haklal in quotation marks. The expression ze haklal, dikotoni basof haMishnah b'tchilas haperek, that was found, that's written in the Mishnah at the beginning of the perek, la suye mai. What is it coming to include? In other words, after the Mishnah gave us a list of trefos, it then states Zeha klal, and it makes this rule, kol she'ein kamo achaya trefa. Anything that, any other thing, or that if it happens to the animal, it won't be able to live, even though right now it's alive, that would be a trefa. So the Gemara is asking, l'asuye mai, what is being included? What other things are included that the Mishnah feels necessary that you have to say Zeha klal? Answer, Lasuye shev shmeitza. This expression is intending to include the seven additional examples of trefa, the seven shmeitzar teachings that were discussed at the very beginning of this perek. So, as far as exactly what that list was, you can look at the beginning of the perek and see the seven additional examples. As we go on in the Gemara, we see a house form, followed by a double underline with dots in it. These markings are explained in the outside margin under the Nosei Mivneh heading. So we're going to see two names. There's Debei Yosef Rishba and Rav Papa Bar Abba Rishba. Debei Rav Papa Bar Abba Rishba. The term Rishba is a reference to a trapsman, a tzayid, a hunter. And the note in our outside margin goes on to say, Shnei Maisim. These two houses represent two incidents. Shehiku Habehemo Al Evarim Misuyomim, where the animal was hit on two different areas, two different organs, and Mumesu, and the animals died. Haim Lahosifam the Trefus. Should we add these examples to the list of Trefos? That if an animal experiences impact on the examples being the Gid Hanoshe or over the Kuya, the kidney, that too should be added to the list of trefos. So now, looking in the Gemara, Debei Yosef Rishba, this seems to be a hunter from the house of Yosef, Mochu Begido Nashya Vekatli. Mochu is to impact or hit on Gido Nashya is the Gid Hanoshe, and the animal whose Gid Hanoshe was impacted, the katli, and an animal died. It was killed as a result of that. Also, the kamei Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. This came to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra to ask him, should we say that a impact over the Gid HaNoshe? The Gid HaNoshe is a nerve in the hind leg, that a impact on that nerve should be classified as a trefa. After all, we see that this animal died as a result of that impact. So now, Rav Yehuda ben Becerra answers, Omar lehu v'chi lehoisif al ha-trefos yesh. Do you think that we are to add to the list of trefos? Ein lecho elo ma shemonu chachomim. All we have is that which the chachomim listed off. And the Mishnah listed 18 types of trefos. Maybe we add 7 more as a result of the Zeaklal, but that's it. Another incident, the Bay Rav Popo Bar Abba Rishbo, a hunter from the home of Rav Popo Bar Abba, mochu bekuya v'katle. They hit an animal over its kuya, often translated as the kidney, v'katle, and the animal died on its own, seemingly as a result of this impact. Asu l'kamei de Rebbe Abba. This case came to Rebbe Abba to ask, can we shecht the animal after this injury, after this impact? Amalohu. So he answered, by virtue of their question, it seemed that they were implying that maybe this too should be considered a trefa. So he says to them, V'chi lehoisif ala trefos yesh. Do you think that you can add to the list of trefos? Ein lecho ela ma shemonu chachomim. All we have as far as formal trefos that are concerned are that which the chachomim listed off. Now, the Gemara asks, regarding these cases, but v'hoka chazino de komesa, but we saw that these animals died. The impact on the Gid HaNosher, the impact over the kidney, shouldn't that be a sign that this is a trefa? So the Gemara answers, Gemiri, we have a tradition, the Ibadri lo samo chaye. Had they scattered over the injured areas some sama medicine or powder, which a medicinal powder, chaya, the animal would have lived. Apparently, this is indicative of the fact of these not being even candidates to be added to the list of trefos. Seems from here that the trefos, if one wants to draw an inference from this comment, the medicines wouldn't solve those problems. The Mishnah. You'll notice in this Mishnah, and we've noted this with our topic heading, Rishimo shel dvarim she'einam trefa. We'll now see a list of things that are not trefos. V'elu ksheros bebehemo. Nikfo hagargeres oi shenizdiko. If the gargeres, the trachea, has a hole in it, or it's cracked, the animal is still kosher. Of course, Rashi adds, when we speak about the trachea being with a hole in it, we're talking about a hole that is not a function of the absence of trachea tissue matter. That's called the Gemara we'll talk about here, and we've spoken about in the past, the size of an isar. It's a type of small coin. If that amount of trachea is missing, that would make it a trefa. So when this Mishnah says nikfa hagargeres, we're talking about a hole which doesn't result in any missing tissue matter, rather a piercing type hole. Mystica is a reference to a crack in its length, and we've seen this discussed in the in previous dapim, that if it's cracked, provided a little bit of trachea at the top and at the bottom is left intact without crack in it, even though most of it has a crack running along its length, it's still kosher. Now, we spoke about the hole in the gargaris. So the Gemara asks, Ad kamo techsar, how much can be missing and it would still be considered kosher? Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Ad ki'isar ho'etalki, up till the amount of this kind of coin which was known to the Mishnah, an isar ho'etalki. Nifchisa hagugolas v'lo nikev krum shel moyach, if the skull of the animal is nifchas, is missing or is broken, and we notice that the membrane that surrounds the moach, the brain, is intact. So just because the skull has been has been crushed, if the membrane around the brain is still intact, it's still kosher. Technically speaking, nifchas is an amount of skull that's missing. Nikev halev lo lebeis chalolo, a heart that has a hole in it, a piercing in it, but the piercing doesn't reach the heart chambers. That's kosher. Nishbro hashedr velo nifsakachut shelo, a broken spine, but the spinal cord is still intact. Nitlo hakovei v'nishtayim en akazayas, an animal whose liver is almost completely missing, but an olive quantity of liver remains. Hemsis ubeis hakosis shenikvu ze letoch ze. The hemsis and beis hakosis are two parts of the stomach system of an animal. We can call it two organs that constitute the stomach system. If there is a hole in the wall that connects these two sections, the hemsis to the beis hakosis, and this is a hole that is between the point of separation, it's an internal wall separating these two organs that run into each other. So if that partition, we'll say, has a hole in it from a hole through and through. Now, let's emphasize this is not a hole that runs from the outside of the organ to the interior of the organ, but rather it's a hole that exists in the part, it's an internal partition between these two organs. That kind of hole is not problematic. It remains kosher. After all, there's a natural hole between the hemsis and the beis hakosis anyway, from which the digested food passes from one to the other. It's not too late to mention, as we've mentioned in almost every previous shiur, to have available a book of illustrations that accompanies Maseches Chulin, primarily the third perek, the one we are currently studying. We have been recommending the book Sichas Chulin, authored by Amitai Ben David, a book of thorough illustrations covering the Maseches. Any points that are unclear that require illustration, you will find salvation in such a volume. Continuing in the Mishnah, Nital HaTchol, Nitlu HaKloyas. Tchol is one of the organs, sometimes translated as spleen. Kloyas sometimes translated as kidneys. Nital Lechi HaTachton, the lower jaw, is removed. Nitlo ho'aim shelo, if the aim is the uterus of a female animal. V'charuso bidei shomayim. This is a situation that the Gemara explains is where the lungs of the animal became charuso, means hardened, and the cause of the hardening was a sense of fright that overcame the animal. That was bidei shomayim. Let us say, for example, a thunderclap. That's something that's not human instigated or caused, but rather because of natural events. Its lungs became solidified as a result of natural causes. Hagluda. This is an animal who is missing its skin. It's alive, but has no skin. Rabbi Meir Machshir v'Chachamim Poslim. Rabbi Meir rules to be kosher. V'Chachamim disagree. And looking at this Mishnah that we just learned and the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta, they have very similar beginnings. This Mishnah begins V'Elu Ksheros B'Behema. The first Mishnah spoke about Elu Trefos. Before we go on in the Gemara, let us look at the Nosei Mivneh heading that we have in the outside margin. We will notice triangles that appear, and they represent Shnei Shitos. Ezo Mishnah Dafka, which Mishnah is to be taken as exact? Elu Trefos, the first Mishnah of the Perek, O Mishnah Seno, or our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, Elu Ksheros. The Nafkamina, Eich Lityaches, Lebodek, the Atmo, the Shof, Lebuka, the Atmo, the Buka, the Atmo, the Shof, Miduchte. the issue will come up, how are we to relate to a case of a puka d'anmo, is the upper thigh bone that became dislocated from the pelvis. How should we relate to that? Is that a trefa or not? Turning to the Gemara, Itmar, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Elu trefos davka. The Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta is the Mishnah that's exact. Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish Omar, Elu ksheros davka. That this Mishnah is exact and precise. This will become clearer as we go along in the Gemara. Pemai komifligi. What is the point of controversy between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? Answer, B'Rav Matana. The point of difference between them will be Rav Matana's case. The Omer Rav Matana, Hai Buka di Atma, Deshof Miduchte, Trefa. As we mentioned, Buka di Atma has to do with the joint connecting the thigh bone into the pelvis. So that joint, the point of joining, became dislocated. That's shof miduchte, literally jumped out of place. So you have a hind leg that's been dislocated from the pelvis. And Rav Matana says that is a trefa. That's Rav Matana's opinion, that's an example of a trefa. Rabbi Yochanan Omar. Now we present the Shitas Rabbi Yochanan, and on Amud Beis you will see third line from the top, Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Elu Trefos Dafka. One is to understand the first mission of the Perek with its list of Trefos as being precise. So the Gemara now explains Tona Trefos Vitona Zehaklau. The Tana, at the beginning of the Perek, gave a list of trefos. The Tana also used the expression Zeh HaKlal, which, by the way, we analyzed just today, just before the Mishnah. We had a little piece of Gemara that asked Zeh HaKlal Asuye Mai, and we say Asuye Shev Shmeis. It comes to include seven additional examples of trefos that are not mentioned in the Mishnah. So Rabbi Yochanan is telling us that the first Mishnah initially gave a list of 18 trefos, and it also taught Zeh HaKlal, which was a elastic clause, enabling us to include other cases. V'chazya l'derav matona da'asya b'zeh HaKlal. The Tana realized that by using the elastic clause of Zeh HaKlal, the Rav Matana case could be included. My Taima, why would you think that the Rav Matana case, the dislocated thigh bone, would also be a trefa? De damyo linetuli. It's like something removed or absent. In other words, the thigh bone is removed from its position. And we had in the Mishnah other cases of netuli, missing things that are trefa. So by virtue of the similarity between Rav Matana and other examples of netula, of removed or absent organs that create trefas, I would have thought that Rav Matana's case should be included. Therefore, Tana elu trefos. Therefore, the Tana added the expression elu trefos. Hani hu the trefa, to teach me that these, meaning these and only these, the things that are listed in the Mishnah, those are the official trefos. Ha the Rav Matana kshera, to the exclusion of the Rav Matana case, which is classified as kosher. In other words, not like Rav Matana's take on the thing. That was Rabbi Yochanan's approach. So Rabbi Yochanan is telling us that the first Mishnah of the Perek is to be taken, we'll call it, with exactitude. Now, as a result of the expression Elu Trefos being taught at the beginning of the Perek, so our Tana in this most recent Mishnah said Elu Ksheros, but not that it represents an exact, precise expression. Once again, it is there only because the first Mishnah, which did represent a precise limitation expression, used that terminology, Eilu Trefa. So this Mishnah, the most recent Mishnah, said Eilu Ksheros. Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish Omar. Rabbi Lokish has an opposite approach. He says, Eilu Ksheros Davka, that this most recent Mishnah is the exact, precise Mishnah. And as far as the background is concerned, Tana Trefos, the Tana Zehaklau. The Tana, at the beginning of this perek, taught a list of Trefos, and also had an elastic clause, Zehaklau. The Chazya Lidarav Matana Delo Asya Bezehaklau. And the Tana realized that he will not be able to include as a trefa the case of Rav Matana. It won't be included. And if I don't include the case of Rav Matana, I'll end up saying that the Book of the Atma Deshof Miduchte is kosher. Well, my time, why is it that the Zehaklal elastic clause would not have included Rav Matana's case? Because Lavlin Kuvi Damyo Volo Lipsuki Damyo Ulinatuli Nami Lo Damyo. The Rav Matana case is not like the standard trefos. It's not like the Nikuvi, the pierced organs. It's not like the Psuki, the cut organs. And it's not even like the Natuli, the missing organs. Because here the thigh bone is present. It's just dislocated. It's not as if it's absent. So if this is all we had by way of the Tanaic literature, I would end up saying that the Rav Matana case should be considered kosher. Therefore, Tana Eilu Ksheros. Therefore, our most recent Mishnah says Eilu Ksheros, the emphasis being placed on the limitation expression Eilu, to teach me Hani Hu Ksheros. That which you see in our Mishnah is kosher. Ha the Rav Matana Trefa. But Rav Matana is out of this category, namely Rav Matana's case really is trefa. If you using our markings, you can see how Rabbi Yochanan's conclusion ended up with the, if you look at the dashed underlining, third line from the top, you see Hoda Rav Matana Kshera. The result of Rabbi Yochanan's approach, at the end of the day, Rav Matana's case would be considered kosher. And as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, at the end of the day, Rav Matana's case is in fact an additional example of trefa. Gufa, Omer Rav Matana, Hai Buka Di Atmo, Deshof Miduchte, Trefa. This is now, Gufa represents a quote of that which was mentioned earlier. And here the Gemara is focusing in on Rav Matana's din. The Buka Di Atmo, the thigh bone, the Shof Miduchte, that became dislocated from its connection, from its socket in the pelvis, Trefa. The Rava Omar Kshera. Rava disagrees with Rav Matana and says, even though the thigh has become dislocated from its socket, it's still kosher. The ifsik nive trefa. However, if the nive were snapped, ifsik is cut, then it's a trefa. The nive, Rashi explains, is a type of sinew that connects the ball joint, the ball of or the top of the thigh bone that sits into the socket. So there's a sinew that connects the thigh bone to the pelvic socket. Now, if that nive is cut, that would be a trefa. The Hilchasa, the Gemara, though, rules differently and says, Ifsik nami kshera. Even if it's cut, the animal is still kosher. Ad demisaklo isakuli. Until that sinew becomes rotted. Nirkav, Rashi says. Nirkav is a lush expression of rotting. Rotting or decomposed. Ad kamo techsar. How much in the kone would need to be missing in order for it to be no longer kosher? So in the Mishnah we saw, Shmuel Omer ad ki isure talki. He said until, if it's missing that amount, the size of an Italian Isar coin, that would make it, then it would be considered a trefa. So that if you have an animal whose trachea has a hole in it that's smaller than an Iser Etaki, the animal is still considered kosher. The Gemara here will deal with other kinds of coins, and this is mentioned in the outside margin, the Nosei, Matbeos Achirim, Shegodlom Ki Iser Etaki, other coins whose size is similar to that of the Iser Etaki. Of what value is that for us? Well, it will have value for people who don't know how big an Iser Etaki is. They will need some other frame of reference. Omar Ziri, Atun Dolo Mischemi Lochoin Shiura. Ziri says, you who have not, Mischemi is to see, have not seen this quantity, this size, namely, you haven't seen an Iser Etaki. Shiure, the dimensions as far as whole in Kona are concerned, Shire Bedinra Kurdinoa, the Kurdian dinar, has that same size. Rashi says that this is from the area of Hare Ararat, often associated with the area known today as Turkey. This term, Dina Kurdina, reminds the one of the Kurds, which is also a people that to this day lives in that area. So there's a coin called Dinra Kurdina, has the same size as the Iser Etaki. Therefore, for people who have not seen the Iser Etaki, they may be familiar with this Kurdian dinar. Vehave Kipshita Zutrisi. It is the same size as this small coin, pshita zutrisi, small coin, umishtakha beni pshiti de Pumbedisa, and you can find it amongst the small coins in Pumbedisa. It would appear that Ziri is addressing the Babylonian community, and the Iser Etaki is a coin that is not familiar in that area. Omar Rabbi Chana Psoira. Rabbi Chana Psoira is a money changer. He is someone who deals with many different types of coins. So he tells the following story. Ilo minoi, in front of me, hafakoi barnabcha. Barnabcha was standing in front of me. Ubo mini dinra kordino. Lashari bei trefsa. He requested for me if I can provide for him a Kurdian dinar for the purpose of checking a trefa. In other words, he wants to use it to measure the size of a hole in the trachea of an animal that had a hole in it. Uboi lamekam kamei. This Rav Chana continues telling us the story, and he says, I wanted to rise in honor, in respect of Bar Nabcha. Velo shavkani. He didn't let me stand up. Omerli, shave beni shave. He says, my son, remain seated. Ein bale unias rashoin lamod vitnei tamidei chachamim b'sho shasukin b'malachton. Bale unias, people that are involved in business, and we'll elaborate on this a little bit more, are not allowed to stand up in front of tamidei chachamim, even though one of the ways of showing respect to tamidei chachamim is standing up in their presence. Nevertheless, since you are a Baal Umanis, and now we'll explain a little bit more, this coin changer had an arrangement with someone who was, we'll call him an investor, someone who provided money for him to work with the public. And they there was an agreement that they would share in the profits. The money changer himself not necessarily putting in any money of his own, but he's offering service in exchange for the capital investment of the investor. So being that he has a debt of work to the one who is investing in him, he must at all times be involved with the work. And this work involves visually scouring the area for people who need money to be changed. So that if he interrupts his work, and his part of which is the attention that he pays to the public, if he interrupts that for the purpose of honoring a Talmud Chacham, he is in effect shortchanging the person who invested in him. So there is a rule that one is not allowed to interrupt his work when he is working on behalf of someone else, in order to show respect to a Talmud Chacham. Obviously, if a person owns his own business and he's not answering to any investors, and it's a solely owned business by one person, and he's the boss, he certainly could show respect to Talmud Chacham. It's not coming off at anyone else's expense. However, in this case, this money changer was working on behalf of someone else who had made an investment in him. Therefore, he is not allowed to interrupt his work. The Gemara asks, "Veloi, is that really so, that the workers are not allowed to interrupt?" V'hatnan, we have the following Tanaic source. Now, this Tanaic source comes from the Mishnah and Bikurim. Bikurim are the first fruits that blossom, are eventually, when they develop, they're brought to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, by the farmers, the people who grew those fruits. And after they're brought to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, they're then presented to the Kohanim. The Mishnah says, in that context, Kol Balei Umnios Oimdim Mipneihem. All the workers stand up as these people march into Yerushalayim. The workers that work in Yerushalayim stand up to honor them. They v'shalim b'shlomam, and ask, "How are you doing?" They greet them. V'yomru lahem, "Achenu anshei Mokom Ploni bo'achem b'shalom." And they announce, the workers announce to the visitors, "You people who come from such and such a place, come, welcome." Bo'achem b'shalom means welcome. What do we see? We have a question. Bar Nafcha was telling this Rav Chana Psora, "Don't interrupt to honor me. You're in the middle of working for somebody." And we have, on the other hand, this Mishnah featuring Bikurim that says that they do interrupt their work to honor those that are bringing the Bikurim. So the Gemara answers, "Amar Rav Yochanan, mipneihem omdin. Mipnei talmidei chachamim ein omdin." You should take this source quite literally. Only in front of the bringers of the Bikurim do we stand, but not to honor Talmidei Chachamim. As far as why this is, it's a seeming, this is an eyebrow-raising comment, we continue in the Gemara, in which the details will be revealed. Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Oven, he attempts to come to the following conclusion. The Gemara, however, will reject this. He says, "Bo urei kamo chavivo mitzvah b'shaita." Come and notice how precious a mitzvah that's performed in its right time is. How much honor we have to show to a mitzvah being performed in its right time. We see that we stand up in honor of those bringing their bikurim, and we don't stand up even to honor Torah sages. And we're talking, of course, about the Balei Umnes. That Balei Umnes will honor these people who are coming to do the mitzvah at its time, and that will supersede the need to show honor to Talmidei Chachamim. So it must be that a mitzvah, when it's done at its right time, is a very precious experience. The Gemara says, you can't conclude here a general rule about Chavivo Mitzvah B'Shaita. Mimai, for how do you know that this can be concluded, that you can make a general rule about the chavivas of mitzvahs, of all mitzvahs, b'shaitam, from this case of Bikurim? Dilma, it could be that this whole halacha, this whole law of honoring the Bikurim bringers, is very limited to this case. Kidei shalotehe nimtso machshila losid lavo, so as not to cause them to stumble in the future. And now a little explanation. The issue of bringing Bikurim involves a great deal of trouble. People, especially if you lived at the far boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, you have your first fruits. You have to schlep them all the way to Yerushalayim. And you can very well imagine that unless you highly encourage these people, you stand up in honor of them, greet them honorably and all that, maybe they, in the future, will not bring the Bikurim. They won't have sufficient motivation. As sad as it may be, the fact that there is a mitzvah alone to be performed, that's not always enough to motivate people. Therefore, in order to ensure that in the future they continue to bring Bikurim, and not machshil them, not cause them to stumble, namely that they should feel a sense of or lack of motivation, we show them honor. But it's specifically to the this case of the Mevi'ei Bikurim, the bringers of the Bikurim. Because as we said, this involves a great deal of trouble coming from the far corners of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, for this case, and only this case, do we show this type of respect. And we can't make a general rule of Chaviva Mitzvah V'Shaita from this particular case. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new topic, and that you can see is indicated by the slash mark that appears. And in addition to that, we have a topic heading in the outside margin under the Nosei heading. We have written Rav Nachman, Chisoron Begugolos Ad Keiser, Kosher. Rav Nachman speaks about a skull that is missing, and he will tell us that he actually says kisela, if it's missing a sela, that's kiyeser misela. The sela is a coin, a type of coin, so that in a skull, a sela amount missing would be a trefa. That if you have exactly a sela, it's as if it were more than a sela. And likewise, Rav Nachman teaches that ke'isar, which is relevant to our most recent discussion, our most recent Mishnah, if it's missing an isar, it is considered as more than an isar. So that when you see the expression ad ki'isar, if you say that it's kosher, and you say it's kosher ad ki'isar, that would mean until an isar, but not including an isar. Because if it were an actual isar in size, that is considered ki'yeser me isar, and that would be a problem. So now, we will also have in this Gemara some geometric forms. We have triangles and double underlines will appear. These are explained in the outside margin. Sidra, we've already used the double underline under the expression ad ki'isar. This expression of ad will be featured with double underlines as we go on in the Gemara. We also have triangles, and they're explained under the Mivneh heading. Sidra shel makoros, a series of sources, kushios, in effect they will represent questions, shemehem mashma de'ad, ve'ad bichlal, that when the expression of until is used, the expression means until and including. That will be a challenge to Rav Nachman's approach, who explains that when you see ad ki'isar, when we say the animal is kosher, we say it's kosher ad ki'isar, but not including the isar. Because if it's an isar, Rav Nachman will tell us, the isar itself is ki'yeser mi'isar, and that would be a hole in the trachea that's too big. Now, this that was as far as introduction is concerned. Now, looking at the Gemara, Omer of Nachman, kisela. Kisela is an amount of skull that, if it's missing, kiyeser mikisela. If a kisela we mentioned before was a size of coin, so if you have this coin size of skull that's missing, a hole in the skull of a sela coin, it's like more than a sela, and hence it's a trefa. And with regard to the trachea, we mentioned that it's kosher if it's ad ki'isar. Now, ad means until, an isar, size, whole. So Rav Nachman says that ki'isar, ki'yeser mi ki'isar, that if it's an actual isar in size, that would be like greater than an isar, and that would be a trefa. So that when we saw Rav Shimon Wiel in the Mishnah say, ad ki'isar, it's considered kosher, I mean up till, but not including the isar itself. So it's up till and not including. Alma kusavra of Nachman, ad velo ad bichlal. That when we say until a particular item, we mean up till but not including. So as we saw in our introduction under the Mivneh heading, these triangles represent kashis, a series of sources where we see the expression ad appearing, And the supposition is that the use of the word ad means up till and including whatever we will feature. So that up till and including, it will represent a kasha on Rav Nachman, who said up till but not including. Eisvei Rav of the Rav Nachman. This source deals with a rope that extends from a bed. And the bed described here is a bed that is made of a woven rope work. So instead of a solid mattress, rather there's a bed frame, and you know, the frame has ropes that are woven, so to speak, forming a type of netting, and you could put on top of that a mattress or sleep directly on that. The point for us right now is the ropes that were used to create this bed. After the bed was, the bed bed work was woven, there was excess rope that extended beyond the bed frame. So we have excess rope. Chevel hayoytze min hamita. This is a description of the excess rope. Ad chamisha tfachim tohar. Up till 5 hand breaths of excess rope, that is useless. In other words, that amount of rope, you couldn't use it as a handle, let's say to drag the bed or to hang the bed or whatever. It's a useless quantity. Therefore, it's called tohor. Tohor means that if, let us say, a sheretz would touch that rope, that extension, that excess part of rope, it would not communicate tuma to the bed. We don't have to spend too much time on the details of tuma and tara and this particular case, but what we do have to take note of is the use of the word ad. And it says in this source that rope up till 5 tfachim is tohor. My lav, the Gemara continues, chamisha kilomata, that 5 complete hand breaths of rope is like less. Meaning, if you say chamisha kilomata, you're basically saying up till 5 and including 5 exact. That would be tohor, which would be a type of leniency. Lo chamisha kilomala. If you have 5 exact hand breaths of excess rope, that is considered as more than 5. So just like it's clear that more than 5 is a useful amount of excess rope, and since it's useful, it would be mekabel tuma, again, without getting into the details of tumas and taras, but we would classify it as useful, therefore it would be mekabel tuma. So, when it says here that ad chamisha is tohar, it means up till. And we're explaining, of course, in defense of Rav Nachman, that up till and not including. Because if you reach 5, literally, that already would be tomei. Toshma, mechamisha viada sora, tomei. This is a source that is a continuation of what we just described regarding the bed and the woven rope workings. So he says, from 5 up till 10 tfachim, notice the emphasis on the ad, up till 10 tfachim, is tome. Tome means it would be kabel tuma. For our purposes, it means that is a useful amount of excess rope. And since it's useful, it's in the realm of kabolas tuma. So now, my lav, asora, kilomato. When it says up till 10, it means up till and including 10. The 10 full hand breaths would be included in that which is like less than 10. And hence, mekabel tuma. Between 5 and 10 tfachim is mekabel tuma. So if you learn like this, you would be saying ad ve'ad bechlal. And that would be a kasha on Rav Nachman. Rav says, lo, asora kilomala. The 10 tfachim, an exact 10 tfachim, is viewed as above 10 tfachim. And the rule says that if you have so much extra rope, excess rope, any rope beyond the 10 tefach mark is considered useless. And we are saying now, ad the low ad bechlal, means up till 10 will be mekabel tuma, but the extent of rope that's from 10 exact and upwards would not mekabel tumah. That's saying asora kilamala. Asora is like already the next breakdown, and hence ad means up till and not including, like Rav Nachman intended. Toshma, we go on to another source. Before reading the Gemara inside, let's describe what we will be seeing. The Gemara will be speaking about earthenware, thin earthenware, thin-walled earthenware, and it talks about sizes of vessels in order for them to mekabel tuma. But we're going to be focusing more than on the vessels themselves. We're going to be speaking about broken pieces of earthenware. Are they capable of being mekabel tuma? Even though they're broken, so one might think that it's broken, it's useless, you throw it out, it's not mekabel tuma anymore. That isn't always the case. We will be interested in the upcoming discussion to speak about broken pieces of earthenware if they have a certain dimension, and they have a certain amount of curvature to them, so that you can keep things in them. Even though they're broken, they still have a function. But we will notice in the upcoming Gemara that there's a relationship between the original size of the vessel and how, and of course, as an original complete vessel, it's subject to absorbing tumah. The remnant of it, the broken piece, provided it's not too small relative to the size of the original, it too will be mekabel tumah. That's by way of general introduction, so as to get into the frame of mind or the mindset that's necessary to understand the upcoming cases. But as we said before, what we really want to emphasize is when we see the word ad, how we are dealing with it. Is it including whatever is mentioned afterwards, or up till and not including? It's also important to bear in mind that Rav Nachman, who opened up this discussion, was of the opinion that when you see the word ad, it's up till, but not including whatever item is mentioned or whatever size is mentioned afterwards. So the Gemara. Toshma. We have a Tanaic source dealing with earthenware vessels. Hadakin shebeklicheres. Thin types of earthenware vessels. Hain, v'kakurusein, v'dofnosein, yoshvin shalom esumochim. If you have the bottom of the kli, let's say it broke, or the side of the kli, the dofen, the side, the wall, if they can sit unassisted, that's yoshvin shalom esumochim, they can sit on their own without needing any other support. Shiuran, the dimension that will warrant them to a mekabel tuma, bichdei sichas cotton. If these pieces of earthenware, even though they're broken pieces of earthenware, if they can hold the amount of oil for smearing on a cotton, on an infant, exactly what the cotton is a reference to is really the subject of a Gemara elsewhere. But for our purposes, we don't have to focus on that level of precision for our current discussion. Suffice it to say, there is a quantity called kedei sichas cotton. So an earthenware vessel that can hold that amount of oil that's sufficient for smearing cotton, that shard will mekabel tumah. The adlug, provided that the original vessel that this shard came from is up to a lug in size. A lug is a liquid measure, so that if the original vessel was ad lug, up to a lug, the shard will mekabel tumah if it can hold a quantity of oil called kedei sichas cotton. Now, the Gemara asks, this term ad lug, my lav, lug kilamato, does it not mean, when it says up till a lug, it means up till and including a full lug? And meaning, if the original vessel was capable of holding a full lug, so then the shard of that would be capable of being mekabel tumah would be if it holds kedei sichas cotton. So what do we see from this? That we're saying that this shiur, this standard of kedesi haskotin, applies to an original vessel up till and including a lug. That's saying lug kilamata, that lug is treated as you would treat something that's less than a lug. And that's the standard that we mentioned, if the shard is capable of holding b'chdei sichas koton. So if you learn like this, so then it's you're saying ad, v'ad b'chlal, that lug is included. And that would be a kasha on Rav Nachman's approach to the word ad, who Rav Nachman said up till and not including. The Gemara says loy lug kilamala, that the lug featured here means that the shard that would hold kedei sichas koton will mekabel tuma if the original vessel was a little bit less than a lug, up till a lug, but not including a lug. If the original vessel held a lug, then the shard, that broken piece that would mekabel tuma, would have to be larger than the kedei sichas koton. And we will see more about this as we go on in the Gemara. So we continue. Second line from the top here on Daf Nun Hey. Toshma, milug ad saw. These are quantities, and we're describing here original vessels. If the original vessel held from a lug, ad saw up till a saw, then berevius. Berevius means the shear, the quantity dimension of the shard. In order for it to mekabel tuma, it would have to be able to hold a revius, a quarter of a lug. A quarter of a lug of whatever. So that if the shard could hold a revius, then it has sufficient significance for it too to mekabel tuma. But once again, our focus is on the expression ad that we see in this source. It said ad sa'ah. Now, my lav sa'ah kilamata. Are we not to understand that any vessel from a lug in size up till a saw, including a saw, the shiur, the dimension of the shard, for it, for the shard to mekabel tuma, would have to be a revius. But what do we see once again? Up till a saw, including the saw. That's ad ve'ad bichlal. And that's unlike Rav Nachman. Loi. The Gemara answers, saw kilamala, that a shard holding a revius would be mekabel tuma, that's if the shard comes from an original vessel up till a saw in size, but not including a saw. If the original vessel held an exact saw, then the shard would have to be larger than something capable of holding a revius. Toshma, so we try again from the following, and this is a continuation. Misa'ah of ad sosayim, if original vessel held anywhere from a sa'ah up till two sa'ah, then the shard is b'chatzi lug. The shard would have to be able to hold a half lug of liquid. And then the shard would be significant and mekabel tuma. My lav sosayim kilamata. Are we not to understand that the reference here to the two saw is that the two saw is treated as the as part of the grouping from saw up till two saw, namely that two full saw of original vessel, the shard size, if it could hold a half lug, it would mekabel tuma. That would be again an example of ad up till two saw, including the two saw itself. Loi, sosayim kilamala. If the original vessel held two saw, then that is treated as something larger, and the shard that comes from it would have to hold more than a chatzi lug, because the chatzi lug quantity, for as far as the shard was concerned, that's reserved for vessels from a saw up till, but not including two saw. The Gemara asks, V'ha Tanya, but we have the following source. It says, lug kilamata, saw kilamata, sosayim kilamata. So that you see from this source that each one of these quantities is associated with the area below them in size. so that you can't say that Sosayim is Kilamala when you have a source saying that Sosayim is Kilamata. The Gemara answers, all of this is not a kasha on Rav Nachman. Hasam lechumra. The reason that we are saying ad, the ad bechlal, in all of these cases that seem to be questions on Rav Nachman, is really because by saying ad, the ad bechlal, the result is a stringency. Taking the last examples, taking the most recent comments as an example, if you have a shard that is capable of holding whatever quantities we were discussing, and then declare that it's makabel tuma, the fact that you're saying something is makabel tuma, you're basically telling me a point of stringency. So that if you have a shard coming from a two saw vessel, and I say that something that's a full, the original vessel was a full two saw, and I say, well, let's view the full two saw as less than that, less than full, two full saw, I'm in effect telling you that the shard that comes from that will makabel tuma, whereas had I classified the two saw exact as being greater than two saw, so the shard, even if it held, let us say in our most recent example, a chatzi lug, it would not mekabel tuma, because I'm saying that the two saw vessel is classified as something larger. That would thereby necessitate the shard in order for it to mekabel tuma to be something larger. So by my saying that the shard is, as it is right now, is capable of being mekabel tuma, that is a stringency. The Omer Rabbi Avo, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Shiurei Chachomim Lahachmir, all the dimensions that the Chachomim give, if you run into, let's say, an issue of an exact measure, we are to treat it with stringency. Chutz Mikigris Shel Ksomim Lahokel, with one exception, and that has to do with blood stains that come from a Nida woman. If a woman sees on her garment a stain, and there, let us say there's a doubt that maybe it's from the menstrual blood, the nida blood, which creates tuma, even though it didn't come with any feeling, with a hargosha that is midoraisa needed to create tuma, but ksamim is a reference to a stain. This halacha says that if the stain is the size of a gris, so if it's more than the size of a gris is a type of legume, so if it's that size, then it will render the woman tomei. What happens if something is not more than a gris, but it's exactly a gris? Ad kigris, we say, if it's, let us go over this point, if the stain is smaller than a gris, so she, the woman, is considered tahora. The halacha says ad kegris, she's considered tahora. Ad there will be ad the ad bichlal, up till and including a gris, because by saying up till and including, there I am in effect being mekil, and in that case I'm supposed to be mekil. However, in general, by saying ad the ad bichlal, if it results in a stringency, then that's the way to go. So then all of the previous cases that we brought as kashis over here, as ad, until these things, these different dimensions that were mentioned along the way under all of our triangled cases, the result of saying ad, the ad bichlal, we end up with a stringency, and therefore we say ad, the ad bichlal. Turning to Rav Nachman's case, we were dealing with the hole the size of an isar, and we want to know whether something is a trefah. If I say there, ad, the ad bechal, up to and including an isar, it's considered kosher, that would be a leniency. Therefore, since the result of saying ad, the ad bechal, results in a leniency, we will not say ad, the ad bechal. And the Gemara proves this with the following citation, Daikonami, through careful reading of the sources, you will see our point, the katani alodahi, concerning the issue of the rope, the excess rope from the bed. It says as follows, Chamisha kilamala. If you have exactly 5 tfachim of excess rope, that's considered as if it's more than 5 tfachim. And we know that if it's more than 5 tfachim, so that amount is useful. And it's therefore makabel tuma. Asara kilamata. If you have exactly 10 tfachim of excess rope, that is viewed as less than 10 tfachim. We know that the point of rope beyond 10 tfachim, that's too much. That's useless. That a person would cut off and use for something else. But the source says that if it's 10 tfachim exactly, that will be treated kilamata, meaning as less than 10, and as a result of that, also mekabel tuma. Notice these two different quantities, 5 and 10. The way we talk about 5 is as if it's above, so that when we say that up till 5 tfachim won't mekabel tuma, that's up till and not including. When we say from 5 ad, from mechamisha ad asara, will mekabel tuma, there the ad asara will include the 10. Both of those approaches, when we say ad chamisha and ad asara, the result in the way we deal with it is a stringency. So that's the governing rule, and therefore there is no kasha on Rav Nachman. In other words, as opposed to the way we began this sugya by saying we have to establish a consistent rule of ad, well, as saying, let's say, ad, the lo ad bichlal, that is not the approach to this issue. But rather, the approach is that when you see the word ad, if you're dealing with shiurim of the chachamim, the result has to be a stringency, with the exception of the issue of stains that we mentioned, and therefore applying the rule of you must achieve stringency, therefore, in the case of Rav Nachman, stringency is achieved by saying ad v'lo ad b'chal until an isar in size is kosher, but not including the isar, because if we were to include the isar, we would be in effect allowing for even a larger hole and still calling that kosher. So we don't say that. That is as a result of striving for stringency. And likewise with these tuma cases, and let us say the broken vessels, we achieved stringency by saying ad ve'ad bichlal. And then we saw in the case of the rope, we saw it actually dependent on stringency. In the case of 5 tfachim, we had to say that up till 5 is not makabel tuma, that's ad v'lo ad bichlal, because 5 already would makabel tuma. And then when we said from 5 till 10, ad asara is makabel tuma, there we said up till and including 10, because that enabled us to also have stringency with regard to the 10 exact as being mekabel tuma. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.